Hey everyone, I want to tell you about another Stephen King podcast. This one is hosted by Kim C, who is a university creative writing fiction teacher, and she knows way more about the writing process than I do. And she is covering lesser-known King works in her podcast, The Year of Underrated Stephen King. You can find a link to her show in the show notes, and she is now 50 episodes in, so there's plenty of content there for you to check out, and I hope you enjoy it. Before we dive in today, I want to let you know a few ways you can support the podcast. The biggest one by far is word of mouth. If you enjoy this and you know other Stephen King fans, please tell them about it. Share the episodes on social media. It really does help. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Chat Cemetery. There are links to those in the show notes. And if you are really dedicated to the show, you can become a Patreon supporter where I will have bonus episodes going up. I am covering all of the Stephen King related comics over on Patreon. So there's definitely going to be a lot more bonus content coming this year. And now let's get into the episode. Hey everyone, Chat Cemetery is back. Today I am joined by Merjani Rawls, and we are discussing the film Dolan's Cadillac, which is an adaptation of one of King's previous stories, and it's one that I don't hear a ton about. And Merjani, now that we have watched it, I think I know the reason.
It falls in league of one of like the Stephen King adaptations where he wrote a short story and a studio had the task of like elongating that into a feature film, and it doesn't quite work that way because there's not a lot to like the thing that they're trying to adapt.
Yeah. And even though I liked the story enough when I read it, as soon as I found out that there was an adaptation of it, I was like, okay, how are they going to make this something that's feature length? Because to me, a lot of King's short stories work better in anthologies or in something like the new Creepshow TV series, where you get like roughly 40-minute episodes, you're kind of in and then you're out, and the story is being told in a succinct amount of time. But with this one, you know, even though I think the cast is really good, you know, it stars Christian Slater and Wes Bentley, and then you have Emmanuel Vaugier. I'm probably butchering that, and I apologize, but Christian Slater alone is a big enough name to get your attention, kind of.
Well, like, Christian Slater, he definitely owns being this villain in the movie. Like, he's definitely bought in. Wes Bentley, though, I like him as an actor, don't get me wrong, but I feel like in this movie, like as like the Tom Robertson, that's his name, I think that he's kind of miscast. I think that there are some points in the film where, you know, you want him to kind of emote, and like some scenes where it's like you want a little bit more out of him, and he just kind of doesn't deliver it the way you wanted to.
Yeah, and Christian Slater's performance as Jimmy Dolan, who is this gangster basically, and he is involved in human trafficking, Christian Slater does a very nice job of just going all out with what he's given. And it kind of reminded me of when I watched Riding the Bullet, and you have David Arquette's performance in that. That's just kind of embracing how kooky his character was, and that really came out here. And I think Christian Slater alone makes this at least worth watching, even though it's one of those movies that is definitely not great, but it wasn't the worst adaptation I've seen either.
Oh, Christian Slater, like, they're like, oh, this is your movie. Yeah. So, you know, him being Jimmy Dolan, they gave him scenes where he kind of goes and speaks in these like philosophical terms, almost like these, all these soliloquies that he does. Mm-hmm. I think that the human trafficking plot line that they add in the movie is not necessarily in the short story.
He is the same kind of character, but I don't think it's necessarily human trafficking.
He's like, I remember, like, kind of, like, reading up on it, like, in a short story, he's still a gangster, but, like, it's definitely, so I think they added the trafficking thing in the film to kind of make him more, to make him more of an evil character. And he, like you said, like, he definitely is probably the best actor out of everybody in the film. Mm-hmm. It's just that, like, there are points where you could see that they're trying to stretch scenes out to make it feature length.
Yeah.
Where they're like, okay, Christian Slater, please, like, talk for 5 minutes.
Yeah, and you also have the whole witness protection part of the storyline. And that is when we see Elizabeth just make the most irrational decision possible. She is the one who agreed to testify and knew what she was getting into when she agreed to it. But because she thinks she's pregnant, she has to run out in the middle of the night to go buy a pregnancy test. And it's like, you really couldn't have just, you know, waited until morning or something, or at least had one of the people guarding you go get it for you. Like, she knew what she was getting into, and then she just makes a very, very stupid choice.
I remember watching that, and I know that they were setting up the whole pregnancy storyline at the end, so her loss becomes more endearing, and, like, it makes it, you know, the fall of Tom Robinson be more, like, sadder in retrospect. But yeah. I remember when she got in the car and they both lock eyes, and I'm like, the car is going to blow up. The car is definitely going to blow up. They somehow, even though there are two cops watching this hotel and this parking lot at all times, they're going to set a car bomb. I don't know how.
Yeah. But shift change, maybe.
Yeah, it was like, did they fall asleep? Like, also, these cops and this investigation is one of the worst in history. Elizabeth and Tom, like, when that happens, like, Dolan and his henchmen, they put one of the dead women in their house. And then again, like, the detective is like, well, we don't have any bodies or anything. I'm like, you just recovered one. She's, you know what I mean? Like, she's, that's why they came to you.
Yeah, the timeline was very off because it's like, okay, did they plant that body in there when they went to go to the cops about this? And so the cops didn't know to be watching the house yet or what? Because the way that this was put together, you have this chain of events happening, but it's really unclear what the timeline is. And it seems like they have spent months upon months in this hotel room, but you can't really tell. And it's just kind of like, okay, maybe over a timeline of months, sure, maybe some cop fell asleep, but it's like, how long had that car bomb been sitting there just waiting for her to get in the car?
And also, if you're putting a couple in witness protection, why would you put them in Vegas where Jimmy Dolan is actively trafficking humans in? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a time-lapse scene that happens in the film where it's like, oh, 2 months later. But I'm like, it takes 2 months to kind of, like, try to get something on this guy. Like, this guy is really egregious what he does, especially when they, like, uncover the first truck and all the bodies in the same desert that Elizabeth sees him doing the crime. And especially with, like, who's Jimmy Dolan talking to when he's trying to figure out what hotel that they're at, and who, like, gave up that information? Was it somebody at the precinct? Somebody at the FBI? We don't know.
Yeah, because it's clear they're not, like, at the Bellagio or something, you know? They're definitely at
the Westin Inn or, you know.
Yeah, it's definitely something that's a little more business-like for a hotel, you would think. And as someone who has actually stayed at the Westin in Vegas, that definitely looks closer to this than any other hotel I know of in Vegas. But it was something where the story is meant to be a revenge story, but it takes so long. It's so drawn out for the kind of story that it is. And you're kind of expecting the timeline to move a little faster in the movie, even if in quote unquote real life, it's a longer period of time, but it just drags out so much. Like, this movie is an hour and 45 minutes long, which in my opinion is like 30 minutes longer than it needs to be, maybe more.
It could have easily been an hour and 15, especially with Tom's descent into madness after he loses Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of padding there because, you know, he follows Jimmy Dolan and he has ample chances to just shoot him. Okay, so backing up a little bit, there are two ridiculous things with Tom, okay? When Tom gets his ass kicked by Jimmy and his, like, his, you know, philosophical henchmen or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, Jimmy leaves him alive in the bathroom because I guess, you know, he wants him to suffer, which is weird because, like, why does he hate him so much? You know what I mean? You already killed Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. Other than him just being evil. But Tom, beaten up, is able to go back to school and teach. Like, nobody checks on him. Like, this guy is bleeding. He's got bruises, all his eyes. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, oh, well, I guess he's okay. And, you know, there's an FBI agent that shows up to talk to him. Like, it's just not believable. And also, with Tom getting that Dirty Harry gun, I'm like, okay, that's funny. But, like,
yeah.
Tom has ample chances to kill Dolan, and he just doesn't do it. He just kind of just stares and stalks him.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping after he got that big gun and then he went out to the desert to shoot it and it knocks him over on the first shot, you would think he would maybe be like, okay, this might be a little too much. And that never happens. And even though that moment itself is pretty comical, it just felt like he was doing everything in a much harder way than he needed to.
Yeah, because like the lady at the gun shop is like looking at him. He's like, this is like Dirty Harry. And then she's like, well, you need a bigger gun. She pulls out the Smith & Wesson 500. And I'm thinking, I'm like, the recoil on that will probably like break his arm because he's never, you can see that he's never shot a gun before. So he's walking around with this gun. You find out that Dolan's Cadillac is bulletproof because like this rival business tries to kill him, which is another like thing because it's named Dolan's Cadillac. And, you know, of course the car has to come into play somehow. But like, even when Tom and Dolan meet up at that rest stop, he doesn't bring the gun in with him. He has to anticipate that they're going to follow him. And like, he gets beat up and I'm like, just shoot the guy. You know what I mean? Like, you have it loaded, just shoot him. And then, you know, Dolan taunts him with the gun. It's crazy. It's just, I'm like, wow. Like, either one of these guys could have just killed each other and then like movie over. You know what I mean? Like, I understand that this is like kind of like a revenge plot, but even when you go into the third act and what happens there, I'm like, okay, why even get the gun?
Yeah. What I remember from the story, and my memory could be incorrect, but it seemed like in that he was more so following him at a distance and didn't really have these kind of close interactions with him. And the scene where he finds out that the car is bulletproof, it looks like it clicks with him that he's in over his head, but he still just keeps making these weird choices after that. And, you know, the story focuses a lot on creating the ditch and having the car go into it. So it felt like in the story, he was more so watching Dolan's movements to know when to plan that big final moment that we get in the movie. And they kind of just added a bunch of stuff along the way, which kind of ruined some of the aspects of the story, in my opinion.
Let me tell you how it was funny, where the henchman is shooting everything at Dolan's, Dolan's truck. They're shooting AK-47s. They're shooting like all these high artillery guns. And then his henchman comes out with one pistol and just kills all of them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he was just like, boom. What I think this movie's trying to, it was trying to get at is like the psychological descent that Tom has, especially with seeing his dead wife, the fact that they were going to have a baby. Like, he's spiraling. He's drinking more. The authorities are not, like, they're taking, it seems like they're taking their sweet time with this case. And I get that. And like we just said, like, if this movie was 30 minutes shorter, that would have been a better, there would have been a better job of conveying that and like that hint at home. But the fact that you stretched this out so much and kind of made Tom Robertson look like a dweeb, and like Wes Bentley's, like in movies like, say, like Ghost Rider, where he's the villain, it works. Like, his kind of stoic, like not blinking so much acting style, like, works there. But as the hero, where like there's a specific scene where he's like talking to the cops when him and Elizabeth are in the hotel and they're like, this is going to take 2 months. And he's like, ah, golly, 2 months. And like, you don't get the anger that you should from him. So the first two parts of this film, it kind of makes Tom look more like a dweeb and Dolan like the charismatic guy, even though he's kind of racist and like, he's just a villain to a T.
Right. And I do think the final third of the movie is what makes this worth watching, aside from just Christian Slater's performance, because that is where I think they finally let Tom shine as a character, because you can see that this is his revenge moment and he's finally soaking it all in. Whereas before, it was kind of like he was going through most of the movie in a haze. And now it's like he's animated and he's enjoying himself, which, you know, is also a bit of a problem in its own right. But I think once he starts getting the ditch ready and, you know, his lips are chapped like crazy and you can tell he's just dehydrated, but he still has the energy to essentially torture Jimmy Dolan once the Escalade is in the ditch. And he finally comes to life in that final big moment in this movie. And it's not that I hated this movie by any means. I just think a movie being too long can really hinder it.
No, that's absolutely right. Like, what you just said, the third act is really the payoff of the movie. Like, getting mm-hmm. there is a little bit messy and it's a little bit long. It's like, okay, like, you know, we kind of get where you're getting at. But it does Wes Bentley a huge favor when it seems like the role reversal is turned. Like, going back to what happened with Elizabeth, and then, you know, Dolan in that rest stop saying, like, you know, I don't want to kill you, I just want you to suffer. So, I mean, even though it's a little bit absurd that, like, Robertson gets, like, that construction crew job, but in a way you kind of get it, because it's like, okay, well, I can't kill him the way I wanted to. But since this, like, Cadillac is almost a force in itself, I can do this whole ditch and have like Dolan slowly run out of air, taunt him a bit, and then just cover up the road. And then I just bury him alive in like a road sarcophagus, if you will. It makes, you know, the very end when like the cops are like, hey, we got something on him. And he just kind of laughs maniacally at the end. It's like, ah, well, you know, well, too late. I killed him. You know, I already got my revenge. Like, it's, yeah, that to me is like, all right, this is where the movie works. If we could have just had a better way of getting here, then you would have a better, I don't think that it's one of the worst Stephen King adaptations. I'm sure we've talked about some, but like, you know, it's just a case of like, you know, you having a short story, and then, all right, well, what do we do with this? How do we adapt this to screen?
Yeah, and I will give them credit that this film actually looks good, because there have definitely been some adaptations that were shot on a low budget and they just don't really look that good. And obviously this coming out in 2009, that helps. You know, it's not something from the 70s or 80s that has a lower film quality. But with this, it was a matter of the second act just being too drawn out. I think the opening and getting to know Elizabeth and Tom and their life a little before she stumbles upon this human trafficking ring, it works, because then we get to know a little bit about her, especially before she dies. And then I think the whole revenge plan just needs to be tightened up a lot more, and that would have made it a more effective movie. And, you know, I kind of warned you after I had watched it. I was like, oh, sorry in advance, kind of. And that's probably why we're not going to go too terribly long on this episode. But for me, it was right in the middle of the road. I ended up giving this a 2.5 out of 5.
I probably give it the same rating. Like, we have seen like those Children of the Corn movies that are really bad. I will say like the mid-90s Stephen King adaptations are hugely bad, that like either deviate from the actual story and try to make something different, or try to go too much into the story but didn't have the budget to do so.
Yeah.
This budget was around $10 million, and you could definitely tell that they gave a little bit more care to like the after effects. Some of the makeup is funny.
Zombie Elizabeth.
Yeah, Zombie Elizabeth actually looks like, okay, like she looks like a believable zombie. The makeup with Tom actually is kind of funny a little bit with his eyes. I'm pretty sure he got punched in the mouth and stuff like that. Like all these bruised eyes. But I don't think that, even though like there is more that I wanted from it, it's not the worst to me. They said like Christian Slater's performance kind of makes this movie better than it should be.
Mm-hmm.
Even though like, you know, the plot points of, you know, there's this couple, they're trying to have a baby. The wife just happens to stumble upon an illegal human trafficking ring. And then, you know, like when she's happy about the baby, she gets killed, and then it comes into a revenge plot. Like, I get all that. Like, you've seen this from other films. And it's weird that now I'm like, oh, this is a Stephen King story. Like, I wouldn't have pictured him writing something like this.
It's one of his different stories, for sure.
Yeah. But like when, yeah, like I said, like at the end, that's where the meat of the movie is. And like, I would probably go, yeah, the same rating as you, like 2.5.
Yeah, it's one that I probably won't watch again. You know, there are definitely adaptations that you're like, yes, I would be more than happy to rewatch this. And this is one where it was just fine, but I don't feel the need to watch it again, because I don't think it's one of King's most compelling stories. And I actually kind of wish they would stop taking short stories and making them drawn out and into feature length films. I think it makes a lot of sense for the novellas, because those are a good length for a feature length film. And we've seen with some of his longer books how hard it is to make those condensed into even two movies, with the case of the recent It movies. And, you know, I think for the longer books, a mini series or making a season out of it, making a couple seasons out of it, works out well. And obviously people are going to continue making the short stories into feature length films. You know, I don't think they're all going to sit here and listen to me, but it just feels like some of them are taken too far. Like, I always come back to the Children of the Corn movies. Do we need over 10 Children of the Corn movies? No, nobody asked for it either, but yet we have them.
Well, Children of the Corn is like the case of like, it was one of the, I would attribute it to like Saw or Paranormal Activity, where something like one movie works for a very low budget. And they're like, okay, well, we got to keep doing this because they keep making money. And then they just depreciate in quality as you go forward. Stephen King wrote one story, and like we just keep on milking cow. Like this one, I mean, it's better at like reading the story to me. Like I said, they did the best they could, but there are some Stephen King books and novels and stuff like that. There are, I mean, I know that they are going forward with many adaptations, as I think we talked about yesterday.
Yeah.
with the news of like The Running Man and Edgar Wright.
It's a lot more than I thought. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there are a lot in production right now, and I know that The Stand just ended, and a lot of people have been iffy on that one. I don't know. Like, Stephen King brings people out to the box office. He gets eyes on people on TV. There aren't going to be a shortage, especially if he keeps on writing, which he will.
Yeah, he has two books coming out this year, so I don't see him slowing down until he literally cannot write anymore.
Yeah, so that's going to happen. I know they're still having trouble with doing adaptations of The Dark Tower. I don't know if they're ever going to get that done.
We'll see. But Mirjani, thank you so much for bearing with me through Dolan's Cadillac. I know it wasn't the most exciting of movies to watch, but I think there's something to be said for just how much staying power Stephen King has had over the decades and how people are willing to adapt pretty much any of his stories, even ones that I thought might not make for good adaptations are kind of in the works. Like, I'm very curious to see if From a Buick 8 ever happens, but we'll just have to wait and see. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me back. It was cool. It wasn't as bad as, like, when you texted me and said, like, I apologize, I was like, oh, God. It wasn't as bad as that. It could have been a little bit better, but, you know, it's not.
Exactly. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.